As long as the Chicago White Sox keep losing, we will continue to talk about them. The losing streak is up to 20 games. We'll dig in a little bit deeper on this historic losing schneid. And, of course, we will recap the weekend that was. Blake Snell threw a no-hitter. The Pittsburgh Pirates bungled away two games, and I had my bachelor party. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who once lost 20 games of Settlers of Catan in a row. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and I know how the Chicago White Sox are feeling right now.
Yeah, are resources an issue for the Chicago White Sox is maybe an interesting place to start the conversation. I will say, Jake, good morning. It is Monday. It is August 5th. It is my sister's birthday. Happy birthday to my sister who doesn't listen to this podcast. I am wearing the hat from your bachelor party where we did not play any Catan. I will say that might have been the only thing that went wrong over the weekend was that we did not play any Catan. Other than that, we had a wonderful time at the beach. It was a great time. We did watch a good amount of baseball, enough to come on here and talk fairly educated about the weekend that was in baseball. But this is going to be a pretty standard weekend recap. And yeah, Jake, the White Sox have lost 20 games in a row,
which isn't good. You know, we often talk about making sure the information we're giving to the audience is accessible, not getting too deep into the baseball stuff. But, like, I hope everyone kind of comprehends 20 games in a row, not winning them, is pretty, pretty bad. And over this weekend, the White Sox went to Minnesota, where the Minnesota Twins just took three easy, simple wins, put them in the pocket, move on forward. Hardly a sweat was had. That losing streak is now up to 20 games. The modern record is held by the 1961 Phillies, who lost 23 games in a row. I have to say, Jordan, did you know that? Because there has been a lot of conversation about whether this White Sox team will live on in infamy forever, whether for decades we will dunk on these fools for their lack of success. And I got to say, I did not know that those Phillies had lost 23 in a row. So maybe the White Sox will get out clean.
Yeah, but again, generally, we are talking about, you know, the total package of terribleness. And even though I don't know what the longest losing streak for either the 1962 Mets or the 2003 Tigers was, but the fact that the White Sox have now, again, I mean, once you reach 20, right? I mean, think about it, right? We just saw the Phillies have their longest losing streak of the season, which was six. There are a couple other teams that have only lost three, four, five games at a time. And, you know, you get swept once, that's three games, right? You get mopped, it's four games. That you're not feeling good, right? You get swept two times in a row. Like, six is really the number where it's like, okay, like, now we're really feeling bad, right? You don't win a game over the course of a week or nearly a week, and you're not feeling bad. But, you know, we've talked plenty about the White Sox being on this horrific pace, and this was really now the thing that was kind of left on, I mean, besides the final loss total, but it started to become clear, like, oh, wait a minute. A streak is a streak. If you sprinkle in a win a week, people aren't going to talk about you as much. But now it's like, okay, we actually have to probably still lead the show with you, especially because they were the only team this weekend that got swept. And I believe it was the 6th consecutive sweep or mop that has happened to the White Sox. So here they go again. And we just kind of wanted to reset. Listen, we've talked about it plenty. You talked about Pedro Grifol on Friday. But I think we should zoom out a little bit more. I want to try and at least conjure up a version of this moving forward, not this season, where it's like White Sox fans don't feel like they're doomed forever. But I think before we do that, we still have to talk about where they're at right now.
On July 10th, the White Sox played a doubleheader against the Minnesota Twins. They won game one of that doubleheader. Eric Fetty was really good. He's not on the team anymore. Luis Robert Jr. went yard, and Chicago won 3-1. That gave them their sixth win in the last 12 games. 500 over the last 12.
Yeah.
Hot Sox, baby. Is this going to turn around? Are they going to buy at the deadline? Asked nobody. Still, the vibes were digestible at the very least.
They were going to trade Garrett Crochet for Tanner Scott. they were gonna reinforce the bullpen. They were gonna go out and get Randy to, you know, pair with Luis Robert. That's what it felt like after they had won six games over the course of like 2 weeks. We were like, all right, like, listen, this is still the worst team in baseball. Now remember, this is another good way to put it. That win got them to 27-67. Still by far the worst record in baseball. Like, it was like, this is still clearly the worst team. Things are horrible. We're 40 games under and we're hot, right?
Now
that's kind of what that felt. Now we go. Let's get this to 30 games under, right? Let's get, if we can really get on fire, maybe we get this to 20 games under. That's not what happened.
Then they lost 20 in a row. And so many games. The offense has been predictably abysmal. Martin Maldonado over that stretch, 1-for-5, baby. He has the highest WRC plus because he has one home run and I guess 5 plate appearances. Andrew Benintendi has been sneaky competent over this 20 game stretch. He is the only everyday player still in the Chicago White Sox who has been an above average hitter over this 20 game losing streak. Okay. Hats off to him. He had been the single worst player in the world for most of the season. And the irony that he has been just on relative fuego while the White Sox are bumbling the chili away gives me quite a bit of joy. However, everyone else is below average. Just so everyone knows, an average WRC plus is 100. If you see a plus at the end of any stat, it is 100 is always average. Okay, anything above or below that should give you a good sense for how everyone's doing. I'm just going to read off some quick offensive numbers, if you don't mind. George Houston, Andrew Vaughn, 74 WRC+. Brooks Baldwin, who just got called up, is at 68. Nicky Lopez is at 64. Luis Robert at 58. Miguel Vargas, who they traded for, is at 20. Corey Lee, the everyday catcher, is at 14. Lenin Sosa is at -7, and Gavin Sheets is at -8. Okay,
this is during the streak. To be clear, their stats over the whole season are exquisite. They're all like 130, 140. This is just a cold stretch for these guys, right? No,
sure, Jordan. Sure, but yeah, these are bad hitters having a bad stretch at the same time.
Yeah. And yesterday, on Sunday for L20, they scored 7 runs for the first time in this stretch. They scored 6. They hadn't even scored more than 5 runs, I don't think, at any point during the previous 19 losses. But the offense really came alive. They got down 8-0 early, but then they started to fight their way back. And then this time, it was the pitching, which has also been terrible, obviously, was able to ensure loss number 20. Now, we look forward and we see them going to Oakland this week, where they will play 3 games in Oakland starting tonight on Monday against a team in Oakland where, like, if you think about it for 2 seconds, you're like, oh, well, Oakland, that's another one of the bad teams. They should be able to like, if they're going to get a win here, I think maybe it could be against Oakland, right? And it's true, Oakland is not good. They are also more than 20 games under 500. However, they are also 19 games better than the Chicago White Sox. So, and as we've said many times over the last few weeks, they kind of bang. They kind of rake. And if this pitching staff doesn't come to play at the Oco Coliseum, which is not what it's called, but I still call it that and will forever, they're going to just hit a bunch of home runs against the White Sox and probably sweep them too. So now we did get a bit of news that they will be calling up one of their top prospects, Kai Bush, to start a game on Tuesday. It will be Jonathan Cannon on Monday, Kai Bush on Tuesday, and who will be pitching on Wednesday? It will be Davis Martin, who is back in the rotation, I guess, for a reason.
Two first names I like, two last names. Got to ask some questions there. Davis Martin, Martin Davis. Martin Ooh, Davis. But is it? Yeah. It really is a first name and a last name just in the wrong order. Davis Martin.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've seen I know people with that first name and last name, so that's kind of a mix. The problem is his ERA is over 7, and he's like in the rotation now. So, I mean, listen, there were reports last week. Oh, are there? This is it. They're finally going to fire Grifols. You know, Jerry Reinsdorf met with him and Chris Getz and told them, he probably said, this is unacceptable, this is embarrassing, blah, 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 blah. They didn't fire him, but it's like at this point, and we've talked about Grifols a bunch, but it is kind of an interesting thing now where I feel pretty good that Pedro Grifols is not going to be around when the White Sox are good again. So we can start there. That's the bare minimum, right? Feel good there. Sorry if that's disrespectful. But it's like, all right, what does firing a manager during a season accomplish in any context, right? You feel like or firing any coach, right? Pitching coach, hitting coach. Why are we firing someone in the middle of the season? Because it has become increasingly rare. It is not, we see it, I feel like, less and less now than even 10 or so years ago. At this point, during the losing streak is an interesting time, because on one hand, it's the most obvious time because it's like, oh my God, we need to not have the longest losing streak in baseball history. We need to do something about this, right? However, as is the case most of the time, whoever is going to become the interim, unless it's a Philly situation, which you can lend some insight on, is probably going to bring a similar energy or at least come from the same tree and group of coaches that the manager did that you fired. Now, in this case, it is seemingly Charlie Montoyo, who's been a major league manager and is, you know, part of this staff. But to me, it's a funny and interesting timing to maybe fire someone, because it's like, are you going to throw this losing streak hot potato to Charlie Montoyo to like wear if it gets to 24? like I feel like Grifols, like, you're in this, dude. Like, you are going to be here. If this team is going to lose however many games, it should be part of your record and not the random interim guy.
And that's the thing. You want the stink on his hands, right? No one else deserves to carry that. And I think that that's what is so heavy about this and so notable about this, right? You can be a bad team, a really bad team, and not become national news.
Totally. Okay. It happens every year. There's three or four bad teams that nobody talks about.
And that's the case right now. The Rockies stink. The Marlins, who split in Atlanta somehow, they're not good either, okay? No one is talking about them. And when you head into a year planning to be bad like the White Sox have, the only expectation is do not be a generational embarrassment. And they have even failed at that, okay? And to me, that is why you would fire Pedro Grifols. The bar was the floor for you, and yet you went subterranean, right? That is an unacceptable state of play, okay? And so I think I can see it both ways, right? Like, you just clean everything up in the winter, or it's like, this cannot happen. This can't happen. You can't lose 20 games in a row, and someone needs to pay. Somebody's heads
sure.
need to roll, you know?
Right, And it is about the accountability in the moment more than worrying about what happens next. Obviously, logically, okay, we get rid of Pedro. Maybe you're firing up your boys because they don't have to deal with Grifols anymore, whatever that means. Maybe they like it, maybe they don't. But, like, you're still the worst team. Like, your roster's still the worst, right? Or at least, I mean, I think at this point, it's hard to say that it's not the worst. And so now, going back to preseason, like, this is why I, you know, plug in all the win totals and the projections and just keep referring back to them. Like, they were projected to be one of the worst teams. They, like, Pecota had them at 66 wins, Fangraph 67 wins. You know, the Vegas over under was 63.5. I mean, now it would be an absolute miracle to get to 50, right? To get to 50 wins, and so let alone 40. So, I mean, we're on pace for, I mean, again, obviously they haven't gotten any better since okay, so they have a .237 winning percentage. So that equates to a nice win total of 38 wins, roughly, which obviously would be the worst ever. I'm just looking ahead now. It's like, as we talk about every bad team, how can we even conjure up what the good team looks like? Where is the hope, if anything?
No, we do not have time or runway to envision that future. It is so far in the distant future. I do not think that there are more than four players on this roster.
That's
right
my
now.
Literally my that is the only question I wanted to ask, which is just like, who is on this team that we can imagine being on a team that's even 500, right? And I don't, that's what's so difficult. And hopefully we'll start to see more of them soon. But like, it ain't Luis Robert and it ain't Garrett Crochet, because those guys are only under contract for a couple more seasons. The only hitter that I could even fathom, honestly, and I know it's not like he's been awesome, is I guess Corey Lee, just because he's a catcher and he's like under Vargas, you would hope so, because he was just, you know, this headlining piece. I mean, I'm not really a believer. I mean, Brooks Baldwin got to the big leagues at 23 and was good in the minors, so he's going to at least have some runway. I mean, the pitching isn't, there's pitchers where that's where there's room to like have hope. It's the Hagen Smith, it's Kai Bush, it's, you know, Noah Schultz, like those guys. But my gosh, I just can't. I said this 3 months ago, how is this team going to be scoring runs anytime soon? I just do not know the answer to that. And that is what needs to be answered in the near future.
Last question before we turn the page on this. Are you rooting for the White Sox to be the worst team ever? Do you want to witness history, or do you want them to buck the weight of this and endure and get past the mark that the 2003 Tigers set?
I don't. Well, wait, so there's two different. We got the losing streak in play and we got the worst record ever in play, right? They could very well accomplish both. Either way, I don't want to speak for White Sox fans, although I have gone on White Sox podcast and say, hell yeah, I want it to be the worst, because I want to endure, not I want to endure this, but it's like at this point, we've made it this far. I want it to be so that when all my friends who are complaining that, oh, my team sucks, oh, whatever, it's like, no. Not even teams who are actually bad. It's like, no. I am a White Sox fan. I watched the 2024 White Sox and you did it. And, you know, the Orioles have made a run at it. They 2021, there was times where it was like, oh, boy, are we heading towards this, too? But I think even then never really reached the level of national embarrassment that this has.
I want them to finish the year with the worst record in baseball history so that the stain will forever be on the hands of owner Jerry Reinsdorf, who, when he bought this club, the Chicago White Sox were above 500 as a franchise. And I believe that his legacy will be that they are now under 500 all time as a franchise. That is bad. That is an embarrassment. Yes, they won a World Series. Yes, they accomplished things. I get all that, right? But this is the correct legacy for one of the most incompetent owners in modern baseball history, right? That is the thing. On like the Wikipedia page, it should say Reinsdorf presided over the 2024 Chicago White Sox, who had the worst record of all time. Good. That's a win. No notes. White Sox stink. Not a surprise. Let's move on.
Final thing. They have 3 in Oakland. If they lose all those games, they will be at L23, which is tied for the record. And then who are they playing this weekend, Jake? The Cubs. I think, I don't know if it's better or worse at home. No, it's not a Wrigley. But
it's going to feel like a home game, big dog.
That'll be interesting. So I don't know if it, from a neutral standpoint, it's better or worse to have them set the record or snap the streak and beat the Cubs. I don't want them to beat Oakland because, like, yeah, at that point, that's not very satisfying for anybody. I would be rooting for the White Sox this weekend. I'll say that.
Setting up the Windy City Showdown, like with the chance to either have the longest losing streak of all, the bragging rights. Very rarely do you get such an important, meaningful, historic game between two teams that stink in the same city. Oh, that's going to be so good.
And now, Crochet should be going for one of those games. So,
yes. Yeah, anyway. So let's quickly talk. Speaking of teams in Chicago that stink, Mopportunities, a mop is a 4-game sweep. We had 4 of them over the weekend. And one of those was the Chicago Cubs taking 3 out of 4 from the St. Louis Cardinals. And the distance between the Cardinals and the playoffs is 3 games. The distance between the Cardinals and the Cubs is also 3 games.
Mm.
What does that
mean? That's not, That's not good.
Now, what does that mean?
That just means that the Cardinals are not doing their part. Again, the Brewers have been slipping also, but they lost the series this week against the Nats. But this is not at all six games. Like I do feel like still we're going to be talking. I think the Cardinals now are probably the bottom of the discussion here in the National League. I know there's plenty of time left, and then we'll talk about the Giants here in a second, but I'm just the Cardinals, the Cubs. I do not think about them as a threat really in any way. So maybe that will change, but yeah, I mean, obviously they'll still enjoy making the Cardinals fans more miserable if they can have any level of contribution to the Cardinals missing the postseason in fairly embarrassing fashion another time. Then this is a good opportunity to do that. Do they play again this season? They do not. So that was the last Cubs and Cardinals series this season. And Cardinals took 7 of the 13 games, but they lost 3 of the 4 this weekend.
Orioles taking 2 out of 4 against the Guardians, which is how you spin facts really strongly. Baltimore dropping the first 2 of the series. Vibes were not good, but the O's come back in the final 2. Jackson Holliday is alive with the Sound of Music. Another ding-dong for the blonde-haired child. He goes yard to help the O's win on Sunday. Corbin Burnes was not great on Sunday. The big concern, though, is Trevor Rogers, who was their big deadline acquisition, was pretty butt in his first outing as an Oriole on Friday night, I believe.
Yeah, he was one of them. I will note, just like side note, everybody ranked the prospects who were traded at the deadline. And our dear friends, Eric Longenhagen and Kylie McDaniel, were like super low on Connor Norby, which I thought was interesting because he was one of the bigger names, I think, that moved. And, you know, BA and Pipeline still had him ranked as one of the best prospect moved. But that is going to be an interesting one. You know, again, we talked about how do the Orioles view all these guys. And I am curious if maybe we were a tad high on Norby. But still, either way, regardless of who they traded, the point is, and Kyle Stowers doesn't look awesome so far either, doesn't matter, right? The point, it's not about that. It's about is Trevor Rogers helping the Orioles, one of the best teams in baseball, win in 2024. So far, that has not been the case. So it's one start. But that's what matters more than even what they gave up. And so that is definitely going to be something to monitor. Cleveland is still a good team. It is nice to see them
timeout
compete. Jordan. Yeah.
Cleveland is, in fact, the best team, I believe.
Yes, they have the most. I think they have the most wins because of the Phillies' skid. The Yankees and the Orioles all have 67 wins, but the Guardians have the fewest losses. So they do have the best record in baseball. Their division lead is currently 4.5 games because, again, the Twins just swiped the White Sox. So 4.5 is maybe not as comfortable as they'd like it to be, but they're still in decent shape. Lane Thomas has looked good, and now we will soon find out again, really, where the state of this Guardians rotation is. I think that's obviously the biggest question. Presumably, we'll see Alex Cobb at some point and Matt Boyd at some point here in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll have a better sense for that pitching situation.
The Miami Marlins split 2 in Atlanta against the Braves. Braves looked pretty good in those first 2 games. Not great. Here is something that I just researched. You know the last time the Marlins went into Atlanta and threw a shutout, which they did on Sunday?
Wow, yeah, right. So Edward Cabrera was really good on Sunday. Max Fried just had like a disaster inning. And then that Luke Jackson gave up a home run. Last time they threw a shutout in, I'm going to guess 2020.
Bing, bong, Jordan, great
Let's
job.
Let's go.
Wait, Sixto Sanchez in Atlanta against the Braves on September 8th, 2020, 4 years to the day before I get married, in honor of me. Acuna, Swanson, Freeman, Ozuna, Riley, Duvall, Flowers, Echeverria, NCRT.
Oh, Flowers. No chance. You know, it's funny. Sixto, again, him getting back to the big leagues, great, awesome. Whether that's a credit to him or an indictment on how far off the tracks it really went. But he's still on the Marlins, right? Like, he'll probably, there's still a version where he kind of hangs around and, like, as they try to come out of it, he's, you know, part of their team.
Now, when's the last time the Marlins went down to Atlanta and threw a shutout while fans were in the stands, which is kind of a different type of energy? That would have been May 18th, 2018, when the logo was still big and fat and M-shaped.
Oh, yeah.
Dan,
who did that one?
Freaking Straley, friend of
Let's
the show.
Let's go. Love
Seven
that.
Seven Strong,
that.
Kyle Barraclough, scoreless eighth, Brad Ziegler, scoreless ninth, to send a lineup of Albies, Acuna, Freeman, Markakis, Flowers, Inciarte, Jose Bautista, Johan Camargo, and Matt Whistler hitting, because this was 2018, to the showers. The Marlins lineup that day, just for the context of how long it's been since the Miami Marlins went to Atlanta while there were fans there. I know it's a lot of qualifiers and threw a shutout. Marlins lineup that day. Prado, Real Muto, Starlin Castro, Justin Bour, Brian Anderson, Derek Dietrich, Miguel Rojas, Lewis Brinson, Dan Straley. Unbelievable. Shouts out to the Marlins. The fish are hot. The fish are hot.
Fish One are other fun. Monster. They're, they are, them and the Blue Jays even, we're having some seriously anonymous squads. Like, true, which is the point when you trade your whole team. But anyway, one more four-game series. And the most successful, I guess the Cubs took 3-4. But the Royals going into Detroit and saying, hey, guys, these two teams, we compare them a lot coming into the season. Oh, who's going to really take that step forward? Well, I wasn't really expecting either of them to actually be in the postseason mix. The Tigers are basically exactly, they could not be, they might be the team I pegged the best. I think I was like the most correct about the Tigers. This is exactly what I expected from them. The Royals, though, as we've talked about all year, a good team fueled by a legitimate MVP candidate in the non-Aaron Judge category, Bobby Witt Jr. And they took 3-4. They lost, sadly, though. It was like, okay, you take 3-4 in Detroit. That's great. But the loss on Saturday, where you give up runs in three consecutive innings in the end of the game and lose in extras, is why Lucas Erzig is not, and Hunter Harvey, who's not been good, is just not enough, right? I mean, there's so many teams I look at and say, why didn't you get more relievers? And they are one of them. And we'll see if it ends up costing them. But I still think that they, you know, Melendez, massive pinch hit homer on Sunday to give them the win there. So, yeah, I mean, they're certainly a lot better than the Tigers. So we've known that for a while now. But this was a nice kind of loud statement of such.
Royals tied for the most wins in baseball since the All-Star break with the Padres and the Diamondbacks, who we will talk about later. But first, let's take a quick break. And when we return, Blake Snell, no hitter. Feels right. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, George Schusterman. Let's hop into some segments. The first being player of the weekend. And who else would we give it to than Blake Snell, who tossed a no-hitter on Friday night against the Cincinnati Reds. And I think that there are, this is probably too simple, but there are really like three types of no-nos in my head. The guys who really deserve it, the guys who you're happy for, and the guys you've never heard of. And I think of that as like, you know, Philip Umber is, who's the guy on the Diamondbacks whose name I can't even conjure up in my head?
Tyler Gilbert.
Tyler Gilbert.
Yeah. I mean, Philip Umber was a perfect game. So perfect game's a different category, but yes. Yes. I mean,
and then there's the middle, then there's like the middle group, right? Which is, I guess, I don't know, like Mike Fiers. Right.
It's like, he's a big leader. It's a longer Means, career. Sure.
John Means, like even Carlos, Wade Miley.
Yes,
right?
Just like normal, like, good
normal
pitchers.
Good guys. And then you have Blake Snell, who, when we look back on his career, is exactly the type of pitcher who deserves to have a no hitter. Is he infuriating at times to watch because he has a bag of walks? Yes. But he is one of the nastiest human beings with a baseball in his hand on the bump in the 21st century, full stop. And he showed that on Friday night in full display.
Had he never won one, or had he never got a no-hitter, it would have been like the Nolan Ryan not having a Cy Young, which is a fact, right? And you're like, what? How's that possible? That's how it would have been, a version of that with Blake Snell. And I talked about this when Cease finally got his, like, nobody has had more outings in the last 20 years without getting a no-hitter than Blake Snell, of six innings, one hit, five innings, zero hits, seven innings, two hit, like eight, like, but he had never pitched into the ninth inning because he knows. And he kind of half joked, half seriously afterwards was like, yeah, leave me alone. I did it. You don't have to talk about this anymore. But like, that's such a, again, think about how, what that says about Blake Snell is that he's done this so many times that it's become tired, that he could have so many games where he just makes opposing hitters look hopeless. I mean, he is the only, like, he's been his own impediment. It's really never been about like, oh man, they're getting to him. No. Blake Snell's getting to himself. Like, he's, here he goes. He's getting cute, or he's just losing the command.
He's at 185 pitches in the fourth inning. Like, he's right. Not going to finish the night.
Right. And in this one, you know, the pitch count was getting up there, and we've just grown so, our instinct is always like, nah, it's not going to happen. Now, partially that's because it's Blake Snell, and partially it's just because it's baseball in 2024. And you just assume, yeah, no, I don't think he's going to come back out. But he managed to keep it under. I believe the final pitch count was 114. And yeah, I mean, when he was dotting up some fastballs, but when he's got two breaking balls that are 80 grade, like he still might have the best stuff in the league. And what we've seen since he came off the IL is a pretty ridiculous run here, where he's allowed two runs over his last five games, and they were both in the same game against the Dodgers. We got an email contemplating, you know, does Blake Snell still have time to win the NL Cy Young? I think from an inning standpoint, probably not. But from a dominant standpoint, I mean, yeah, if he keeps this up for another 7-8 starts, then yeah, he's going to be in position to maybe get on some ballots. He might get on and certainly get paid. I mean, again, like, I don't even really know how to talk about that because he won the Cy Young and didn't get paid. So like, I have no my calibration for that is kind of messed up, but no, he's amazing. He is one of the nastiest pitchers I've ever seen in my life, and that was on display once again.
The experience of watching this is something I won't forget, because we were at my bachelor party with like a bunch of my very good friends gathered around the TV watching this. And usually, Jordan, when you and I are watching a no-hitter quest, we are doing it alone with our headphones on at our desk. Almost always, right? I have never really been at one of these. Sometimes it's like on the couch with my wife, I would imagine, is another version of that. The communal experience of watching a no-hitter was awesome. You know, like once it got to the seventh inning and it was like every batted ball was like, ooh. And for two people who've been to so many freaking baseball games, right? But I've never seen this. This was like the most, this is going to sound stupid. I get it now. You know, like I got it before. Duh, it's a no-hitter. It's cool to see. But to see it with other people really heightened the stakes of it, and I really enjoyed it. Giants took 2 out of 3 from the Reds. The Reds, we'll have a longer conversation about the Giants. They're probably the bottom of that race. If Snell can just guarantee them a win every five starts, though, that is notable. So keeping things in the NL wildcard hunt, we're going to do a little role-play action here, okay? Arizona at Pittsburgh this weekend. Arizona takes 2 out of 3. Bad bullpen performance by the Pirates on Sunday. Bullpen news going on in Arizona as well, with their closer Paul Sewald out of the ninth inning spot. And Jordan, what I want you to do is I want you to put on your manager hat. And I want you to tell me, experienced closer Paul Sewald, that I'm not in charge of the ninth inning anymore. But you still need me to pitch well. Because it's not like you're going to trade me. Can't. It's not like you're going to send me to AAA. Can't. I'm just going to be pitching in the seventh now. And you want me back pitching well. So, you know, I've been told I got to head into your office. I'm going to, here. I got it. 1 second. Here. Whoa. Hey, Skip. Oh. You want to see me?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Paul. Yeah. Take a seat, man. So, first of all, I know you've been grinding. I know it's been a tough stretch, and I know it's not, you know, for lack of preparation or lack of care, but you know, for whatever reason, it's just not working right now. How are you feeling? Do you feel like anything's
good.
Changed? You know, again, you had a nice, I know you're injured to start the year, but do you feel good? Are you good physically? Or you feel physically okay?
I feel good. Yeah. you know, throwing a baseball hurts everyone all the time. And I do it in a particularly wonky fashion. But as far as that goes, yeah, I feel outstanding. Thanks for checking in. I'm going to go grab some lunch.
No. So thanks. All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. But here's the thing, man. So it's been a rough go. You know, it hasn't been, I'm sure, up to your standards, right? You have a very high standard for your performance. And ultimately at this stage of the season where, you know, we have some other guys that are throwing better, you know, you've picked up these guys so many times, you know, since we brought you here a year ago.
Can you cut to the freaking chase, Torrey?
Yeah, now we're gonna kind of take it a little bit easy on you here. We're gonna let some of these other guys pick you up here. We're gonna keep you. We're gonna try to find a little bit of a softer landing here. We're gonna find an easier spot for you. We need you. We are gonna have you closing games again this season.
But right now,
we're going to have to go in another direction. I'm going to try to get you back out there on the horse as soon as possible.
Okay.
But we're gonna give some of these other guys a shot for now. All right. I hope that's what are you going to do about it? I'm the manager. I'm also Torrey Lovello, and I have all kinds of street cred and respect. To, you know, everyone loves me in this room. So sorry, dude. I make the rules here.
But do you still believe in me, though?
I still believe in you. You will close the game for us again this season. It's just not going to be today or probably tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Torrey. I'm gonna do everything I can to win your trust back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm putting my Jake hat back on. Jordan, have you ever broken up with anyone? Because that was terrible.
Wait, why? That was a bad breakup?
Yeah, you got to get to it at the front.
I need to make sure, because I got to give myself some outs early where it's like, if you had told me, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm like, oh, great. Awesome. I'll see ya. All right. I don't even have to make a tough decision here.
Yeah, but once no, I you say told I'm healthy, you're fine. Once I say I'm healthy, which you probably already know.
No, I mean, I just, who knows? These players are, they're never telling me the truth. I have no idea.
It's like breaking up with someone and saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't see each other all the time, emotionally, romantically. Just tell me. Take you out of the night.
Well, but this
you
is
gotta
a
give me the info. Give me the info early and then hold my hand. Okay?
I can't ghost my clothes. Like, he's still in the room. Like, that's not really an option.
Closer.
I'm not. He's still going to be there. This is not a normal breakup thing. This is a war. This is a demotion. It's different than a breakup. Anyway, all that said, the interesting thing about this is that the D-backs bullpen still has a lot of questions, and who they choose to turn to in these. We saw Brian Thompson. They have this rookie, Justin Martinez, who throws really hard, but sometimes doesn't throw strikes. The Gink is still there. They traded for AJ Puck and he got out of it at the end of the game on Sunday. So they have other options now. And I have to imagine, had they not traded, you know, for AJ Puck or had some of these other, then maybe they would have kept riding with Mr. Seawald. But it's not awesome. And Pirates fans, you're welcome for not talking too much about what happened to their bullpen on Sunday, ruining another marvelous performance from Paul Skeens, where he was merely good, but still left the game up 4-1 and is Paul Skeens. And you should probably win those games because that's what he gives you the opportunity to do. And they failed to do so.
Not very good. Let's move on to sorry for your mentions, and then we'll take one more quick break. The Philadelphia Phillies were going through it. You could argue that they're still going through it. They were up 5-0, 5-0, 5 points to zip on Saturday, and they just freaking blew it against the Seattle Mariners. The bullpen implosion to lose their sixth straight game. The tweet after that loss from @Phillies, and these are the types of mentions you dream about, Jordan Schusterman. Final 10, Mariners 6, Phillies 5.
Here's why this really checks all the boxes, right? Sixth loss in a row. A game in which, I mean, obviously the Phillies are expecting to win every game because they're maybe the best team in baseball. A game against a team that had been struggling. A game on the West Coast. So your fans
posting
are already...
posting score at 1 a.m.
Your fans
people,
are... Right.
Anyone who's awake for this in Philly... is either drunk on a Saturday,
yep,
up on a Saturday,
right,
or waking up to this news on a Sunday.
Yes, right. Up on a Saturday and like staying up to watch the game, right? I mean, this is the thing, and I know this having watched the Mariners blow plenty of games over the years after midnight Eastern, right? Like, it is just a terrible feeling. And in a game where everything was going right, they're getting like four quality innings from Colby Allard. They're getting RBI base hits off lefties for Brandon Marsh. Bryce Harper finally, you know, stopping his cold streak. It was like, we're going, we're cruising. They had gotten absolutely whooped on Friday, right? And it was like, okay, I don't know what happened there, but like, now we're kind of back, right? The game that they ended up having on Sunday was the game it seemed like they were in the middle of having on Saturday, and instead, just Jeff Hoffman, worst outing of the year by far. And then at the end of the game, you had a combination of Carlos Estevez not hitting a spot and some bad umpiring, and the Mariners took advantage, and they went 6-5. So, Jake, why don't we read some of the mentions at Phillies?
Sorry for your mentions at Phillies. This is from Chris. What if they never win a game again? What if, Chris?
I want to read this one from Andrew. It says, this is worse than the Eagles because instead of losing once a week, they lose every single day. For God's sake, somebody throw a chair or something. I mean, is this the first week you've watched the Phillies this season? Seems like yes.
It is funny because the Eagles did this so blatantly, and so that's why Phillies fans are more horrified by the slump, is that they watch the Eagles do this and everyone say it's fine, and then the Eagles just, I think, lost in the playoffs like right away. This is from a account, I can't really read the name. Should have never put those hideous insurance patches on the jersey sleeve. Ever since, been losing left and right. This is funny because the first game of the jersey patches was Wednesday, and so they've only lost three with the jersey patches.
And I guess one, because they won on Sunday. So that's not a horrible record. I like this from Luke. It's just a headshot of Whit Merrifield. 4-13 since cutting Whit Merrifield. And Braves were looking good until those last two games. So that is definitely something we will be watching here. This is from Manny.
No. Do not run through that Whit Merrifield stop sign without me getting talking about it.
Sorry.
This is hilarious because there is no way there are any Phillies fans who were advocating for more Whit Merrifield playing time 2 weeks ago. There's no chance. Everyone was like, Merrifield needs to be DFA'd. Merrifield needs to be DFA'd. Are they 4-13 since cutting Whit Merrifield? Yes, I will say. I'm sure that there are like people around the Phillies who all loved Whit Merrifield who are bummed that he's not there anymore, right? And if Whit Merrifield does kick their ass in the playoffs, that will be a story. Just something to keep in
mind. That's, yeah. I would say that would definitely be a story. This one's from Manny. Can't even fault Estevez there. I gotta wait. Estevez. I gotta work on that. Estevez, I believe. Manny continues, this might sound crazy, but at this point, just bring up Marshawn, DFA Chief Vibes, I assume that's our friend Garrett Stubbs, and bench JT. Whoa, okay, he's just ready to start the Rafael Marshawn era. Now, what he is referring to is the pitch that was a missed call was Estevez missing his spot by like 2 feet. And a pitch that ended up being very much in the zone, but Realmuto had basically reached across and just like stabbed at it. And so, again, if we don't have the magic box, no one is calling it a strike. But
this
because
should not
we do,
be a strike. This yeah. should not be a strike. If you JT set up and in, and Estevez threw it low and away, and he had to like, if you missed your spot by 2 feet, I have no problem.
But it's also, there's two different conversations because it's one is like the spirit of this a strike. And then the two is, what was Realmuto really supposed to do? Like, are people mad that he didn't frame that better? Like, that's ridiculous. That's completely absurd.
Just bench him. This is for Matt. Matt says, someone needs fired.
I love that. That is a great fan thing where it's just like, I don't care who gets fired, but someone should be. It's like, all right, you want to fire the clubby? You want to fire the bat boy?
Someone needs fired.
You want to fire the security guard standing behind home? Any others? there's some great ones. Yeah.
This is from James, whose handle is literally PhillyFan8. That's what I love about doing this segment too. Is the handles are like so they're like better than real life. You know, better than
what does PhillyFan8 have to say?
I can see why the at Yankees chose Aaron Boone over Rob Thompson. Boone is a better manager overall. Now, Jordan, because I'm an intelligent boy, I figured that maybe somewhere in at Philly Fan 8's mentions, he said very nice things about Rob Thompson at one point in the past because, you know, freaking duh, he turned the team around in 2022 and then was like the manager of the year basically last year. So I went to Philly Fan 8's old tweets and I searched for Aaron Boone and Rob Thompson. What do you know? October 7th, 2023, last year from Philly Fan 8. Dear Yankees fans, you probably wish to hand the managerial job to Rob Thompson over Aaron Boone. Thompson's a genius for the Phillies ever since he got the job. Master move by Dombrowski. So, James, at Philly Fan 8.
Oh, it's not even 2022. This is last year.
Last October.
Oh. Look,
come on. It's like J.D. Vance behavior.
Pickling, oh, my gosh. Believe in it. Oh, man. That's incredible. That's great. By the way, that is another also good example of like everyone thinks they have the worst manager.
Managers and closers are kickers. Okay.
Everyone is.
It's okay. No one's happy.
No one has
when
it worse
well.
Than us. Our manager is just, I'm like, no, he's probably fine.
Right.
One honorable mention for our sorry for your mentions. Actually, this is a different category. This is a spinoff. This is you deserve your mentions. How about that? Basically, somebody was tweeting about James Wood and who was it? Someone was tweeting about like James Wood being the future. And someone was like, James Wood is striking out 38% of the time. If he's the future, it's bleak. And Mama Wood, Paula Wood, very active on Twitter.com, which is definitely what it's still called, responded to this random anonymous person saying that James Wood strikes out a lot and said, before you crap on a 21-year-old who just got called up a month ago and never did anything to you, you should at least learn how to properly calculate strikeout percentage. Because James Wood is only striking out, I believe, 32 or 33% of the time. And still high, but it is based on the plate appearances and not the at-bats. Like batting average, you idiot. And
this
guess
was a
what?
Padres fan, clearly, like, not...
Padres
know.
Fans, it's okay. Jackson Merrill is awesome. Your team is pretty good. Don't worry about James Wood. It's not your problem, okay? It's fine. It's fine. You are... this is a kind of like, I'm not mad. It's like, okay, well, then you wouldn't be tweeting about it.
James Wood's mom being active on Twitter in a respectful way. That
Massive dub.
And hilarious because the idea of James Wood saying anything remotely spicy ever at any point is impossible. Like he's
totally.
So quiet. And so I understand why Paula Wood feels some sort of obligation to stand up for her quiet young son who was the youngest of three, right? Like there's, you understand that dynamic very obviously. Paula Wood, don't change a thing. I think she ended up deleting it and someone like tweeted the screenshot, but Paula, like, good. If people are factually incorrect, please correct them. Also, James Wood's going to be okay. I'm not too worried. I think there are some questions about the batted ball quality that we can ask at some point, but I just believe enough in the person and the athleticism that he's going to be good. So.
Yep. Totally agree. All right, let's
Nats
take
took,
a... Oh, yeah,
Nats
sorry.
Nats took two out of three from the Brewers. There you go. Brewers
they
are only
sure
at
did.
5.5.
Yep. I'll take a quick break, and when we return, we'll run through the remainder of the series on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. I'm Jake Mintz. I'm going to get married soon. Not Woo! George Schusterman. He's already married. Congrats, man. You like being married?
Oh, yeah. Yep. 1 year anniversary coming up next week. So that's kind of nice. I feel like I just got married like 2 days ago. That would have been weird because I was at your bachelor party. Let's go to our next segment.
Another guy who's married.
Yeah. Who?
Is Mark Leiter Jr. married?
You should. You better check that. Our nuclear overreaction is it has been a week, not even a week, since the trade deadline. And it is time to declare our deadline winners and losers, a.k.a. Ed is slightly different on the individual level. Oh, confirmed. Is he married?
Married with a kid. Married with a kid. Whew.
That was awkward. All right. Nice. Big wife guy, Mark Leiter Jr. We are now going to crown, less than 1 week after the deadline, the deadline acquisition MVP and the deadline acquisition LVP. We already talked about possibly the LVP, Trevor Rogers. What the hell, man? I thought you were this big left-handed ace coming to town. Orioles can fix you. Just kidding. Lost to the Guardians. Miguel Vargas embarrassing himself defensively, embarrassing himself offensively. Not looking like the return we wanted. Is it 1 week? Sure it is. But Jake, let's get more positive because you just mentioned Mark Leiter Jr. I got to say, when they trade for him, I was like, yeah, that's actually exactly what the Yankees need. This guy's kind of awesome. His splitter is one of the best secondary pitchers in the league. Are you ready to declare Mark Leiter Jr. the trade acquisition MVP after 6 days?
Yeah, it's a nuclear overreaction, but it's one worth making. He has allowed just that one run. He basically, like, on the day he got traded, rolled off the plane and then pitched in extra innings against the Phillies and threw a scoreless inning with the runner on second. And the Yankees didn't score in the top. So that was like a huge inning in a game they ended up winning. I believe he was the only player to play on the day that he was traded, which is so badass. Like, landing, not even knowing your catcher's name or whatever, and just like, yeah, I throw a splitter. Good freaking luck. Like, I'm going to get some outs now. He just has the reliever unflappable presence about him. He was a 22nd round pick by the Phillies out of the New Jersey Institute of Technology. Okay, this is not someone, despite his name being Leiter, he is Al's nephew. This is not someone who was like destined for major league success. Okay, he has earned what he has gotten. Watching Mark Leiter pitch for the Yankees, it's a great fit. He gives their bullpen so much more length. That's going to be a huge pickup for them. He is someone you can throw out there in the eighth inning and feel pretty good about, even though the stuff isn't necessarily dominant.
Plot twist, Mark Leiter Jr. is the best pitcher in the world. Now we need to like pass that on. Who would say that about Mark Leiter Jr.?
Clay Holmes.
Clay Holmes? That doesn't sound like something Clay Holmes would say. It sounds like something Stroman would say. Stroman would totally say that.
We should tell Carlos to say it. Well, let's get our buddy Carlos Rodon on the horn. Tell him he needs to call Mark Leiter Jr. the best pitcher in the world.
Quickly, I do want to just mention Paul DeJong quickly, because I was super, like, when the Royals traded for him, it was like, what's the plan here? Like, is this just insurance? He's just playing I guess they faced a couple lefties in Detroit, but he's playing third, and they really seem to have like sort of soured on Mikel to a degree where maybe they will just platoon Mikel with Massey at second and just roll with DeJong every day. But yeah, so I'm very curious to see how much he actually ends up playing. So
I mean,
we'll see.
If you want to really get into it, Jordan, I mean, this is a scary stat, I believe. Really just shocking stuff. But since the Royals acquired Paul DeJong, he has been better than Bobby Witt Jr. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Oh no.
Now that's only if you go by
in four games.
That's
five
actually not
games?
That's actually not true.
True. All right. All right. So you were ready. You were like, I think you started that point because Paul DeJong has like somehow accumulated like 0.8 war with the Royals or F war. And you were like, oh, maybe that's more than Bobby Witt. And it's like, no, Bobby Witt's actually awesome. So.
In the month of August.
Yeah. No, not quite.
In the month of August, Paul DeJong hired WRC Plus and Bobby Witt. Should Bobby Witt move to the bench? Paul DeJong moved to short. Just a thought.
Hopefully not. Royals, don't do that. I don't do that. That's a bad idea.
We mentioned Mark Leiter Jr. He was crucial in the Yankees' win on Sunday. They took 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays. Aaron Judge is getting walked so freaking much because he is up to 41 home runs. Wow.
Pretty good. Good player.
It's a lot.
41 homers and 103 RBIs and 92 walks. He is obviously leading all of those categories.
Yankees and Orioles are now tied atop the division, even on games played, even on wins, even on losses. The Orioles this week have the Blue Jays on the road. The Yankees have the Angels at home. Should be another interesting one in the world of the AL East. Yankees have the White Sox next week for three. So something to keep in mind with the White Sox. If they lose this weekend, or these three games against Oakland, and they lose this weekend against the Cubs, then it's the Yankees.
Oh, man. So that actually, yeah, I think I want them to win against the Yankees. That's way better. Aaron Judge, 18.5% walk rate, which is obviously the highest in the league, 19.2% last year, and only 16% when he hit literally 62 home runs. So I don't know. I've said this for 2 years. I don't know why he doesn't get walked more than he does. But anyway, Blue Jays are they're in full tank mode, as they should be. So we'll see. I'll be in Toronto this weekend. I'll talk more about that later this week.
Enough overreacting nuclearly. Jordan, one more segment before you say goodbye. There's a first time for everything. Every weekend we see something with our eyes that we've never seen before. And I put this in this category, even though we have kind of seen this before, three times. Joyce of the Los Angeles Angels threw a pitch, picked up the ball, and threw it towards the catcher at 104.7 miles an hour.
Yeah, so I think this is good for first time. I already talked about Ben Joyce, my good on Friday, so you can go back and hear more extensive thoughts on him then. I will say that as a first time for everything, this is interesting because he threw a pitch in college that, like, there were rumors with not TrackMan, but like some other radar gun system, because in college, not every team, it's like there's at least some amount of discrepancy between what teams are using. Less so now, even 2 or 3 years later, it's all TrackMan, whatever. There was in college when he was at Tennessee, there was like Ben Joyce threw 105. And at the time, I was like, no. I was like, he's definitely throwing 102, 103, and that's awesome. Well, I have nothing to say here. He threw 104.7, which on television is 105. And when I showed this to you, like, at this point, velocity is so common that, like, the difference between visually 98 and 101 is not much. Like, I don't feel like when I watch it, I'm like, oh, wow, that's that versus this. This looks legitimately notably faster than 100 miles an hour in a way that I can't, like, it's basically only Chapman has, even Mason Miller. I mean, Mason Miller did. I mean, he's at hit 104 too, but it does take a lot to look actually notably faster than 100. And this was that. And now he's the closer because Estevez is gone and we get to keep watching him do this.
It's like when we started watching Ellie run the bases. Yeah. And it was like, this is not what like, we're used to seeing.
Nope. And the Angels take 2 of 3 from the Mets. Mets, you want to stay in this? Got to beat the Angels. Got to do it. Got to beat the Angels.
The Angels played the, oh my God, Jose Iglesias soundbite after he grounded out. Like Iglesias like rolled
That's
over.
Perfect. I'm surprised the Braves like organist hasn't done that. Maybe they have, but that feels like a Braves move. That's very funny. That's good. You got to have fun. Find a way to enjoy yourself this log of an Angel season. Three series left for Turbo. Well, yeah, anything else? Wait.
Big series for the Mets right now against the Cardinals in St. Louis.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, wow.
Wait,
yeah,
no, Time out. What? They have one game today in St. Louis and then three against the Rockies. So wait, they're going from – this sucks for the Mets. Oh, my God. Mets are going from Anaheim to St. Louis playing one game and then going to Denver. Oh
yeah, this is this happens over the course of the season where rainouts they basically schedule on Mondays in between trips. There's a couple of them later on in the season that are even goofier. So, but I mean that one game could very much matter. I mean, this is again, these are the two teams that are, you know, competing to stay in it. So very relevant. All right, Jake, we have three series left. Let's put them in turbo mode. I'm going to go first with the Rays and the Astros. Rays. Oh, we traded away all our players. Oh, time to go tank. No. They don't know how to do that. They're going to hang around and probably end up around 500 or slightly above. They have the same record as the Astros now after this weekend at 57 and 54. Obviously, the Astros are way more desperate to be winning than the Rays are, but the Rays are the Rays. So the pitching that they had on Sunday was just freaking hilarious. Hunter Biggie opener with... who is it? Tyler Alexander, Manuel Rodriguez, and Edwin Uceta going CG Shuddy for, or sorry, combine whatever, a group team project Shuddy over the Astros in Houston to take the series. So obviously a frustrating game for Houston, and the Rays are just going to have a good time for the rest of the year.
San Diego takes 2 out of 3 from the Rockies. San Diego is the team with the best record in baseball since the All-Star break. They are 11-3. Since we went to Texas, they are now 4.5 back of the Los Angeles Dodgers, which is pretty remarkable considering we crumpled the Dodgers up and gave them the division. The Padres and the Diamondbacks have both won 8 of their last 10, which is tied for the best in MLB. They're in the second and third wildcard spots. Will be fascinating to see if a Dodgers schneid kind of opens the door for either of these teams. Manny Machado really heating up, which has been good to see for the Padres. He was 5 hits for them over the weekend. Dodgers is the last series here. Dodgers 2 out of 3 in Oakland. But the A's bang, though. Don't forget.
The A's do bang. Flaherty looked pretty good in, I believe, his Dodgers debut, wearing number 0. So that is certainly interesting. Dodgers stretch coming up. They are home for the Phillies this week. So that is interesting. And then Pirates at the end of the weekend, which I believe will be Skeens versus Ohtani round 2. So that should be fun. Skeens Dodger Stadium debut will be exciting. And then they go on the road for Milwaukee and St. Louis. So, I mean, tough little stretch here. We'll see if I know the Brewers are going the wrong direction, but yeah, we'll see if the Padres or the D-backs can make things at least moderately interesting in the National League West. We did it, Jake. That's it. Podcast complete. Thank you to Hillary Georgie for producing this podcast. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for hosting a wonderful bachelor party. Thank you to your father for really showing out.
Showing out.
It was a great time. I hope you had a good time. You had an okay time? It was fine.
I had a great time. Highlight of it was waking up early on Saturday morning, going to the local Little League field, and just playing 2 hours of softball. Shouts out to my dad for filling in his 60s, out there grinding, having good at-bats.
Playing first, pitching.
A little too pull-happy for my liking. Yeah. Hilarious scenario for our softball game is that we had 4 softballs. One of them was less soft, which meant that it carried way more than the other balls. And we, like, it was kind of hard to hit a homer. But then, like, if you got a hold of that one, it would just go.
We were basically alternating between the 2017, 2021, and 2023 baseballs every pitch. But yeah, so it was a great time. It was sweaty and sticky and delightful. And I'm still sore because I guess we're old now. But looking forward to your wedding in a little over a month. But we have many more podcasts to do until then. You can email us at baseballbarbcast@gmail.com. We appreciate the support. And we will be back on Wednesday. Any final thoughts, my friend?
I'm going to try and lose 20 things in a row. I've lost my wallet 20 times, so I understand how the White Sox are feeling. Talk to you on Wednesday.